Welcome to Little Yellow Couch. We're Karen June
and Zandra, your hosts for the Style Matters podcast.
You're listening to our fourth season of interviews with some of the best stylists, designers, artists, and all-around tastemakers in 2016. This podcast is for all of us who are obsessed with creating spaces in our lives that reflect what's most important to us. We call it Fearless Decorating, and we're delighted you're here. We welcome you to snuggle up on the couch this week with your favorite pet and listen to our chat with unashamed maximalist Kimberly Duren of the blog Swoonworthy. We fell in love with her eclectic boho glam style at first sight. She has truly discovered the design balance of bold colors and tactile fabrics with luxe finishes while still making you feel that you can sit back and put your feet up. We chat about everything from living in a well-designed home with pets to designing a room that will afford you a good night's sleep.
You have a fantastic style that makes us really happy to look at.
I know.
We are really excited to dive in. I think you call yourself an unashamed maximalist or an unabashed maximalist, which
is
perfect description of your style. But I want to start off with your cat. What's your cat's name?
My cat's name is Nisha.
Nisha. Nisha looks fabulous on your furniture.
She does match everything in my house.
Oh my gosh. I mean, and I'm not a huge pet person. You know, I don't get terribly excited about pictures of pets, but on your website, the pet pictures are phenomenal because your cat looks like a million bucks.
Oh, thank you. She is terribly photogenic, that one.
Yeah, she is.
She really is. She's much more photogenic than I am.
Well, she goes with your style.
When I got her, everyone said that to me, like, oh, of course you would get a leopard print cat.
Yes, of course
you would.
And she's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So
she's mental as well. She's absolutely the craziest thing I've ever owned. But yeah, I love her to bits. She's full of personality, that one as well.
That's great. I think that's true of cats in general.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
That is so funny. Well, I'm going to segue into another question because I had no idea we were starting with cats.
Sorry, I had to get that out.
Our Style Matters podcast, which is now all about cats.
Yes.
Well, about cats and how they go with style. I can talk about cats all day. I'm perfectly happy with that.
Well, this is your interview, so if you want to talk about cats the whole time, we just ask our listeners to please direct all negative comments towards you. But actually, one of the things that I wanted to ask you today is that you wrote an article on your blog about the 9 things I learned to keep my home from going to the dogs and cats.
Oh, yes.
And I just thought that was brilliant because my house is overrun with dogs. As I was saying to you before, we board dogs at our house, small dogs.
Yeah.
And I usually have at least 4 dogs here. And there's dog hair everywhere, and I dust on a regular basis to, you know, no end. And it doesn't help anything. I guess if I didn't do it, you know, it would get pretty bad around here. But style is important to me, obviously, and to you as well. And so when I look at the spaces, your gorgeous home on your blog, it's kind of neat to know that you share that space with so many pets.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important. One of the points that I made is that you really kind of, you need to loosen up a little bit. You need to let things go because it's not going to be perfect. My dog just went through a stage of molting and he's a Sheltie and he's quite long hair. And it was just this, and he's just kind of finished the molting process. Thank God for the next year. But that stage, for that month or so, or 6 weeks or so, it was absolutely impossible for me to keep up with. I was literally figuring every day, you know, dusting things off constantly. And after a while, you just go, do you know what? It is what it is. You know, I can try to keep up with it as best I can, but I'm not going to be following him around with a tiny vacuum cleaner where he goes because it's just ridiculous. So I do think there just comes a point where you go, okay, you know what? Yeah, there is going to be cat hair on the bed at times. And there is going to be times when I'm going to have to hoover, you know, a couple times a day to keep up with the dog. But if I don't get to it, life goes on. Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, I think it's finding that balance between, for me, it's always, oh, I'll get to it, or I will, I know it's just going to be, there's going to be more dog hair in 10 minutes, so why bother? And then it really does become kind of gross. And so you have clearly found this really good balance between keeping up with it, but not being obsessive about
exactly,
it.
Exactly. I think that is the point, really. It's kind of like, you know what? Yeah, it is important to keep up with it. If I hadn't done lots of hoovering over the last 6 weeks, the floors would be furry. Right. You wouldn't be able to see
carpet.
Them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you can't get obsessive about it. It's a home where animals live and there are signs of life, you know, yeah. in that regards. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad, you know, it's not a bad thing to have a home that looks like it, there's life in it and that people are using it. And of course, there is going to be, you know, the dirty mug left on the side, and there is going to be a pair of shoes in the hallway that weren't supposed to be there. But these are all signs of a home that's lived in and loved. And there's right. certainly nothing, you know, there's a certain positive really about that. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think loosening up is always a good thing.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that comes across in how you design. Like when I first look at your rooms, I'm just immediately drawn in. They just have this feeling of welcoming me in. Like I want to walk into your living room. I want to sit down next to your dog. I want to sit under that wallpaper. I want to sit in that little circular chair with the sheepskin rug. Like I just want to cozy up.
Thank you. That's an amazing compliment, and that's exactly the kind of look that I want. As much as I love a glam, you know, aesthetic, I also want a home that's welcoming and that people don't feel afraid of being in. That they feel like they can be comfortable and be relaxed and be welcomed and it feel like a happy space. So that's really a huge compliment. So thank you very much for that.
Well, and just to keep going on that for a minute, because I think that this is the difference to me between a home that has been designed all at once by a very talented interior designer, but it looks like it hasn't been lived in yet. Sort of it's newly done.
Yeah.
It lacks soul,
doesn't it?
Exactly. And your home, which looks very, it's so luxe because of your glam tendencies.
Yeah.
So, and yet, I think Karen's absolutely right. It's the kind of luxury where you want to walk in because you know everything's going to feel good. You're going to touch the velvet sofa, and it's going to feel good in your hands, and your eyes are going to be delighted by the patterns that you've put on your walls or on your furniture. And you know, it's that kind of luxury that you want to sink into, as opposed to the kind of glam luxury that you're afraid to touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's really kind, though. Thank you very much. My head is swelling.
Well, we're excited to show pictures of your space with our listeners on the show notes page. So, yeah, this is giving us lots of fodder for a lot of visuals. So we're excited about that.
Thank you very much. I think that's always something that I've taken. I call my style eclectic boho glam, which it's kind of meaningless in some respects. It's just kind of catchy, but at the same time, that sort of bohemian feeling of the lots of colors and lots of patterns, and it's that touchable sort of comfort and that the invitation that bohemian design gives you to just kind of relax and kick back and, you know, squish into all the wonderful textiles and fabrics and things. And that's sort of where that influence comes from, where I want those sorts of touchable fabrics, and I want people to kind of go, ooh, this is nice, what's this, and immediately touch it. That's what I want.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I am like, touch everything.
Oh,
I,
my
like,
gosh, I have such a problem.
My mother says I've been like that my whole life. I go into a store and I just have to touch everything.
Yeah.
So I just want to know what it feels like.
Yeah. I have to reject a story, but when my son was like 5 years old, I guess he was in kindergarten, and I get a call from the principal because he went up and touched the skirt of a girl in class. And this was, they decided that he had to go to the principal's office for this and be talked to about how we don't touch another child like that. And
oh,
you know, they were very, very concerned and everything. And I went into the meeting and I said to my son, why did you touch the other girl's skirt? You know, And he said, oh, well, the fabric was so nice and I wanted to know how it felt. And I thought,
he's all right.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I wonder where he picked that up from.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he would love your space too. So,
well, he'd be welcome to come over and touch whatever he wanted.
Thank you.
And when you look at your house, it feels like everything makes sense together. But when you think about it, boho and glam are definitely two distinct styles that a lot of people, or at least the genesis of them, would not feel like they're very opposite. You know, the boho sort of influence was more kind of the hippie vibe and the casual laid back California vibe. And that has absolutely nothing to do with the glam that you might see in 1940s New York or Hollywood glam or whatever. Yeah. And yet you've married them, really making it look like they do belong together. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about those two things. You did just mention about the boho and how that gives you that sort of feeling of comfort. And the glam part, what attracts you, what are you attracted to about the glam part, and how do you bring that into your decor? Maybe you could describe that for our listeners.
I think it really comes down to the fact that I'm a complete magpie. I like
shiny things.
And I think that is probably a big part of it in terms of the glam look. I have loved gold and brass for years now, probably at least a good 5 years, and certainly before it was trendy in the UK, because it's only sort of, I know the US is a little bit ahead of us in that respect, but in the UK, it's really kind of only just sort of starting to be a trendy thing. So when I first started to use gold and brass in my interiors, people thought I was crazy. They're like, this is like a throwback from the 90s. What are you doing? And I used to be with my gold spray paint, spraying everything because I couldn't find gold things. You know? So I think it's sort of that aspect of that aspirational glamour of, you know, the 1930s and 1940s is sort of, you know, Hollywood Regency style, Art Deco style. And there's a lot of that kind of little bits of that sort of influence in the designs that I do in my own home. I just think it's beautiful. I love its reflective qualities. I think it brings a lot of warmth to a space. And so I've always tried to incorporate a bit of gold and a bit of brass in my interiors. And I think it does sort of give it that bit of a luxe look that I don't know another material that works so nicely with kind of giving a space that sort of glam sort of look. So I've always sort of incorporated a lot of that into my home. But I just think it works really nicely with lots of pattern, with lots of color, possibly only to me. But, you know, when I started my blog and I started kind of really expressing my style, there was a lot of people that went, oh, actually, yeah, that kind of works. That kind of works really well. So that surprised me because I thought, you know, I was the only one who liked lots of leopard print and also lots of shiny things. I don't know. But clearly there's a lot of us out there. So that was, that was good for me.
Oh, well, count us as two people who love it. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the thing about gold and brass is that it does have a timeless quality. It feels, has a sort of historic element to
Absolutely.
It. Yeah, it calls back to an older time. I mean, even though there's plenty of current gold and brass being manufactured now that is also wonderful, but there's something, maybe it's just your house in particular that has a feeling of things have been around for a while. And, you know, you clearly care about craftsmanship and that kind of thing. And it really, it goes beautifully together, the glam and the boho, for sure.
Thank you very much. I think it works really well. It makes me comfortable because it doesn't feel too stuffy, but it's also very happy as well because, you know, that I do like to use lots of bold color and things like that. So it feels happy to me. And that's why I feel like it's a reflection of my own style.
Speaking of color, you have another article on your blog that I really loved. It was a kind of like a flow chart on how to know whether you're going to pick a light color or a dark color.
Oh, yes. Whether you should paint your room a dark color. Yeah.
Brilliant way to put it, because we get this question all the time. And of course, most people seem to be very afraid of dark colors. But I love that your approach was that it's not, don't go bold just for the sake of going bold. Make sure it's actually right not just for you, but this particular room and what you use it for and how you want to feel in it.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about how you came up with the idea of doing it as a flowchart?
I think very similar to you. I was, because I've done a few dark rooms in the past.
Yes, your bedroom is gorgeous.
Yes, I have a black bedroom. My living room for a while, we've only just finished sort of redecorating it, was a really dark, rich indigo blue as well. So I've lived with dark colors in certain rooms for a while. And I think I've had so many questions in the past, people saying, I've got a northeast facing room, but I'm not sure if I should go dark. Should I go dark or should I go light? And it's like, there's so many little factors that are involved in deciding whether you should go dark or light. And I think one of the biggest things, like you mentioned, is how do I want the room to feel? When am I going to be using the space? Am I affected by things like sad, where, you know, if it's been dark, if it's been cloudy, I mean, we get it badly here in England, where during the winter months, you barely see the sun. So if this affects you psychologically, is it the best idea to go with a dark room? Because from personal experience, I found that it wasn't a great idea for me to spend a lot of time during the day in a very dark room, especially through the worst of the winter months where we didn't have a lot of sunshine. So you have to kind of think about the practicalities of the way that you live and of the way that you want to use the space and when you're going to use that space, not just whether the room suits it in terms of the style of the space, whether it suits it or not. So yeah, I thought it might be fun to kind of approach it in a flow chart manner rather than, you know, a list or I don't know, a Venn diagram. It just seems that it might flow nicer if I kind of set it up as a flow chart. And I really enjoyed putting it together, but my goodness, it's harder to put together a flowchart than you might think.
That's what I thought when I was looking at it. I'm thinking, God, she must have spent a lot of time trying to figure this out, because you've got the if yes this way, if yeah, no yeah, that way thing. And it's like, wow, this. I bet there a lot of work went into this.
I give a lot of credit to people who make these flowcharts all the time, because right, yeah, it's
infographics.
It was more challenging than I thought. But yeah, it was a fun exercise to put together. You know, I sort of told people, you know, this isn't the end all be all. If you really want to paint your room dark, and my flow chart says it's better not to, paint the room dark. Don't listen to me. You know, it's not an end all be all, but it's sort of a, if you're on the fence and you're not really sure, then this might help. So that was kind of the point of it. So hopefully it helped out a few people make a decision. And I think it did, actually, from some of the responses that I received. People said, you know, I've been wondering whether or not, and this really helped me out. So yeah, job done. So I was happy with that.
Right. Well, and I do think people, they want an answer, you know, they want to be sure before they take the time or the money, depending if they're doing it themselves or not, they want to be sure they're making the right choice. And Karen and I, well, probably me more than Karen, I paint so often that I don't mind redoing something.
Me as well.
But I think I'm unusual. I think most people do mind.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to have that kind of help. And in the bottom of the diagram, you do, there are instances when you say, what's your preference?
Yeah.
And I love that too. There is no right answer. And this flowchart just helps you ask the questions that I think you might not know to ask.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're right though. I think people do sometimes, they want a definitive, yes, this is going to look great. No, don't do it. And it isn't that easy. And to be honest, I've taken chances with certain things in my home, and sometimes they've been great, sometimes they were a disaster. But you know, you don't know and you don't learn unless you're kind of willing to give it a shot. And like you said, I'm not afraid of, if I get it wrong and if I want to need to repaint, I repaint. But for me, that's not a big deal. And I know for some people, like you said, some people would prefer to avoid that if possible. Not that I can blame them.
Well, I think one of the most important things to me that you pointed out was this idea of considering one's feelings in a space, how one is going to feel in a space. And you have another article that you wrote about how good design can make you sleep better.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and we just talked about darkly painted bedroom, and I sort of, it's funny, I've had really dark cave-like bedrooms.
Yeah.
And I currently, I mean, it's all been the same bedroom, it's been painted like a million times, but right now everything, it's like one day I woke up and I was like, everything needs to be white. And I brought in a very light shade of gray to, you know, for a little bit of contrast. Right. But, you know, all my bedding's white, everything. All of a sudden, I just needed this clear, clean, light feeling in the space. But I like how you talk about really considering those feelings. So what for you made you decide to create a sort of moodier space or a darker space for your sleeping quarters?
I think one of the things that I spoke about in the article is that I have a sleeping disorder that's called night terrors. And it's usually only present in children, but as an adult, I have it, lucky me. It's not horrendous. I've lived with it for a really long time, and it's just what it is. But I wake up in a panic. Most of the time I don't remember what it is I've dreamt about, but I have real trouble falling asleep. And then when I do fall asleep, sometimes I have very, very restless sleeps. And so I'll wake up in the morning feeling exhausted because my adrenaline's been pumping in the night. You know, I've gotten up, I've gotten out of bed. All of these sorts of things are happening during the night when I should be resting,
right.
Sleeping,
and they're terrible. Not.
So I needed to make my bedroom as absolutely optimized for sleep as I possibly could. So for me, if I have a space that's, I know by now that I need it to be perfectly quiet. I need it to be very, very dark. I need my pillows fluffed in a certain way. I need to have certain bedding. You know, I need to have certain space around me. My other half cannot be touching me because I'm asleep. You know, I can't have a cat, you know, climbing on top of me. It's like the stars need to align for me to fall asleep quickly and to have a nice restful sleep. Painting the room dark seemed like a natural sort of solution for having a nice cave-like space in the evenings. During the day, I think we're quite lucky in respect to the room itself. It's got two really big windows. It's got fairly high ceilings as well. I live in a Edwardian Victorian home, and the ceilings are fairly high. So it gets really good light. And because it's on the second floor, it gets really, really good light. So during the day, it's very bright and very lovely in there. It doesn't feel dark or cave-like at all. But in the evening, when the sun goes down, you know, we have blackout blinds. The blackout blinds go down and lights switch off, and it is dark can be, which is exactly what I wanted. So yeah, I mean, it was a style decision, I suppose, in some respects as well, because I liked the look of black walls. I liked the look that I'd seen in, you know, magazines and Pinterest and things like that. So it just seemed kind of a natural decision to try it in the room. And when I'd first suggested it to my other half, of course, he thought I was crazy.
A black bedroom?
And said, absolutely not. So I convinced him to do just one single wall. So we just did the wall behind the bed, and that was it. And he lived with it for about a year. And then on one Saturday morning, he said to me, you know, in the bedroom, you know, the black wall, I'm thinking it might be okay for you to paint all four walls. Now, before he finished the sentence, I ran down to the local DIY shop and picked up the paint. And I think that weekend, before he had a chance to change his mind,
yeah.
Four walls black. So yeah, it was sort of one of those things. I jumped on it. As soon as he said he agreed, I was like, okay, that's it. It's done. And it's been,
awesome.
In that way for, I can't even remember when we painted. I think it's probably about 3 years ago now. And I have no intention of changing it at this moment in time because I still really like it. But
it's gorgeous. And your textiles, your patterns, I mean, the whole room is just, it like the rest of your house, it feels luxurious. Oh.
And it doesn't come across dark.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, there's such life and energy in the space still. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, you don't look like, you know, it doesn't look like it belongs to a teenager who is going through angst.
A gothic teenager, no. No. I really liked the way that the bright colors popped against the black walls. So I've used a really kind of bright palette in there of reds and yellows and blues, which seems like it should look like a kindergarten, you know, play school or something. But it's, I do like the way that it looks. I think it kind of complements the black really nicely. And it sort of looks, still looks happy and still looks bright, but yeah, but except for having black walls. So
Well, this is, again, it's all tempting our listeners to go look at the photos that we're going to post. So,
they're yeah, start with the cat. Oh, but the Sheltie, I have this picture up on the screen right now where he's sitting on the couch smiling.
Yeah. So, Shelties do smile.
He is
for
a
sure.
smiler. Even when we scold him, he's still smiling. I'm like, do you not understand what's happening here? You're getting in trouble. And he just looks at you with his huge smile. He's just the happiest, happiest creature.
Oh,
which is nice, obviously, but it is quite funny. He always looks like he's smiling.
One of the things that I loved as I was looking through your website, first of all, is your house tour, which we've already been talking about a lot of your rooms, but you've done a beautiful job of giving us all of the before and afters, and that's, I don't know, that's just secretly exciting to me. Well, I guess not secretly. I don't know.
Not anymore.
It's not a secret. Everyone knows now. Oh my gosh. But you do a beautiful job of sort of showing us how the spaces started and where they've come to. And one of the things that I love is you have a project that you've done. You do a lot of DIYs, and one of them is this dresser that you've had that has been redone, I think, 4 times already.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved seeing all the different iterations of it and how they looked in each of the spaces and uses. And I just thought, you know, another thing you talk about is the idea of not doing everything at once and doing things on a budget. And so I thought that was such a great example of shopping your home, using what you have, sort of over time developing a style. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, either about sort of that piece of furniture and its journey, or sort of just the idea of taking the time to develop your style and allowing items in your home or the way you use a space to develop over time.
I think that little dresser is probably a very good example of how my style really has changed over the years as well, and how my style has developed. So it's probably just a good representation of the entire house. So I think when we first moved in, we moved in 2010, and I don't think I was very sure of my style. I had an idea of what things that I liked and things that I was pretty sure I didn't like. But it took, you know, it took years, really, for me to kind of say definitively that I know what my style is now. And now I know, you know, when people can look at things and go, oh, that looks like Kimberly, you know, that's a swoon-worthy, you know, print that is, you know, that sort of thing. But it took years for me to develop that. And I think people are such in such a hurry, and I probably was myself. So I'm not saying that I wasn't like this. If I had had the money at the time, I probably would have decorated everything all at one time, but I didn't. And so it forced me into sort of this slow decorating, you know, mentality where you take your time over things. You decide whether or not spending X amount of money, that's, you know, the splurge for you, which whatever that value is going to be different per person. But whatever your personal splurges are, you know, is it going to be worth it? Are you going to have it for years? Can you utilize it in different spaces, etc.? So I think my design then became a lot more considered. And that was really not necessarily through choice, but just by a circumstance. You know, we had to kind of come up with creative ways to bring the house, you know, to our tastes and how we were planning on using the space. But I think in the meantime, what that did was it actually did allow me to kind of experiment a little bit, to not spend ridiculous amounts of money on something that only a couple of years later I might be tired of or I might not like anymore. So it gave me that time to sort of hone my style and try different things. And it's funny with that little chest of drawers, because it has been made over, I think, 4 times now. And every time I think about replacing it, or I think about getting something else in there, or, you know, I have a little bit of money, should I buy this or that I've considered replacing it with? And I just think it's kind of part of the house now. It's almost like, it's like a tattoo, you know, you just, even if you don't particularly like it anymore, you just live with it because you think, no, that's part of me, you know? And I think that little chest is sort of like that. It's like a little representation of the house and all the changes that it's gone through, but it's personal to me now. And I can't see myself ever parting with it because of that. But yeah, I think it does take time. And I think that the fact of that you, if you don't have a huge unlimited budget, and then let's be honest, how many of us really do? That's not necessarily a bad thing. I think having a limited budget forces you to be more patient. It forces you to be more creative. It forces you to ask those sorts of important questions, whether you actually, you know, is this an impulsive purchase, or is this something that you really truly love and really want? And if the more you surround yourself with those things that you have given that consideration, or you have saved up for that splurge, they become more special. They become less throwaway and more, you know, more personal to you and more special. So yeah, I do think things do evolve and change, and your tastes are going to change along with that. But I think if you really spend time understanding and honing your own style and allowing that time, you know, to pass, I don't think actually that's a bad thing. I think that could be a very good learning experience really for anybody.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think taking the time to figure out what you want the dresser to look like next.
Yeah.
And making it exactly what you want, because you are making the changes to it, is very rewarding.
It is. It is very rewarding. There is something to be said for, I think that's probably one of the reasons why I like the DIY side of things, is because it feels good to be able to stand back. It is harder. You know, it is more hassle. It could be more mess, et cetera, than calling someone in. And it probably takes longer. But there is something very, very satisfying about, you know, stepping back and going, you know, and me and my other half going, yeah, we did that. You know, pat ourselves in the back.
Exactly.
Let's go get some, you know, wine or champagne.
Let's celebrate.
Celebrate.
Definitely.
Okay, well, it's my turn. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but we're wondering if you could answer the question, style matters because blank. I know I put you on the spot there, but so we're just asking you to tell us, why does all of this stuff matter to you? You know, you're spending your whole life on this, and Karen and I are as well. And a lot of people are, if they're not doing it professionally, they love it. You know, they love antiquing, or they love to paint, or why is it important? Why, what does it do for you personally?
I think the fact is I've always been a creative person, or at least I felt the need to have creative outlets. And I think a lot of people who are bloggers and designers, interiors, you know, into their interiors, I think many of us will say that. When I was a kid, I used to write stories, and I used to write funny poems for my friends. As I got a bit older, teen years, sort of, I was always hitting thrift shops to just find things that nobody else had, or more likely what no one else wanted. Given some of my choices. I mean, it was the 90s, so, you know, that's my excuse. But
it's a good excuse.
In my head, I've always kind of considered myself a bit of a weird kid. I always felt different, and not in a I'm a special snowflake sort of way, but just kind of, I felt a bit removed from what other kids my age were into. I loved art, and I loved photography, and I used to customize and embellish my clothes, and all of these things sort of fed into my creativity. And I actually quite loved how my interests and my passions and the way I dressed, how these things sort of externally represented what I felt and who I was on the inside. And I think as I got older, and you know, I kind of conformed in certain ways, as everybody sort of does. But there was still a need that I had to express myself and express my creativity through various different outlets. So, like, I mean, I always loved interior design, but I didn't really get the chance to sort of sink my teeth into it until we moved into this house. And as I said to you before, we didn't really have the budget. I didn't really have the vision, probably, in some respects at that point in time, to do what I thought I wanted. So it took trial, it took error, it took patience and creativity to turn my house into something that I felt proud of, and that I felt, you know, was a proper representation of me. So again, it became an outlet for me to show the world that I was different and I was unique, as all of us are, but I was okay with that. And so that, I think for me, style, it is an outward sort of expression of what's going on inside my head, or what's going on inside. And I think that's something that's kind of precious and unique and personal to every individual out there. And I think that's what I love about it, that it doesn't really matter particularly what the style is. It doesn't have to be my own personal take. But if someone's home looks as though it's a personal reflection of them, of what is going on inside their house, inside their mind, or who they are as a person or as a family, etc. That's far better look in my eyes than something that looks like it's come straight from a catalog. And I think, you know, I think that's really what style is about to me. It's sort of an external reinforcement of who someone is and what they are sort of on the inside. And that's really kind of what I love about us, what I love expressing in my own home, because I feel like it needs to be sort of that outward expression of who I've always been, even as a weird kid. You know, I'm a weird adult now, so it's reflected in my house.
Well, I'm glad I put you on the spot because you answered that beautifully. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, this has been really an incredible time to talk. We really appreciate your time, Kimberly.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute, absolute pleasure. And thank you for putting me at ease as well. I really appreciate that. Always start off with talking about the pets and that's it. I'm immediately at ease.
Thanks so much for listening. If you've liked what you've heard, we'd really appreciate if you take a moment to rate us on iTunes.
And if you'd like more fearless decorating ideas from Little Yellow Couch, sign up for our newsletter at littleyellowcouch.com, and you'll receive our free e-magazine called 5 Ways to Decorate with Books.
Connection, style, substance.
That's Little Yellow Couch.